This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. Last week, veteran newsman Datuk Kadir Jassin's blog post about our monarchy made national headlines and drew sharp criticism. The blog post was about how much is paid to our king in the past 1.5 years. He subsequently resigned as media spokesperson of the Council of Eminent Persons. Lawyer Fahri Azad is here with me to discuss the Civil List Act 1982, which spells out in writing how much is allocated to the young Dipertuan Agong every year. Fahri, welcome, and thank you for doing this.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Chua. I just hope there'll be no resignation from me after that.
the reason why I wanted to speak to you was because I stumbled upon this article that you wrote in 2009. It's titled What We Pay Our Royalty on the website lawyerbureau.com. Very informational website, very informational article.
Thank you.
But before we come to that, what did you make of recent events which led to the resignations and what was alleged in those articles?
I think it was very interesting simply because now we are finally having a discussion about what are we paying our royalty. And the question also that follows that, given some of the proceedings that have gone on, is what are we paying them for, right? So there have been pictures being circulated about what they're supposed to get. I don't know how true that is, but I think the government, it's good to clarify what exactly that is. And I think insofar as Kadir's resignation, I think it was correct of him to do that, because he was wearing too many hats. And even though that may be his personal view, it could very, very easily taken to be an official stance. Right. And I think given what he wanted to say, that wasn't the best position to be in to say it.
Right. Is such an information that he alleged publicly available out there, the accountings, the Excel spreadsheets of what our royal household spent on?
Right. Okay. Let me preface that by saying I don't know the veracity of that document that we saw, that Excel table kind of thing. But it won't be available that way, you know. The information about what the royalties earn is public domain information. It all has to be gazetted, right? But this information is not easily accessible, and I doubt you would get it in the way that has come out in the social media.
Right. So in the past week, every article that has covered this issue, Kadir's initial blog post and then his subsequent resignation, has always ended in the last paragraph or two with the line that officially the Treasury or the Ministry of Finance allocates 13.5 million to the Agong. At least that is accurate for last year. And do we know if this figure is constant every year?
That I don't know, but I imagine that they would take into account inflation. Okay, and they've been doing that since the beginning, right? If you look through the legislation in the 80s, there were a few amendments made to the enactment back then, yeah. But since the Civil Law Act has come into play, now the government doesn't have to amend the act every time they want to increase them. All they have to do is issue a cabinet issues the order. Right. And then their pay would be recalibrated to suit the times, I imagine.
This act is the Civil List Act 1982. How did it come about and what happened in 1982? Was there a debate when it went through Parliament or when it was passed?
Before this, the Agong's pay was regulated by the Ordinance Peruntukkan Diraja 1957. Yeah.
Okay.
That was, it had pretty much the same structure as the Civil List, because the Civil List is actually based on the English Civil List as well, because they also have a constitutional monarch there. So the Civil List, where the English were concerned, were what we paid our royalty for their own pay, for the palace, and that's how it used to be. So we pretty much adopted that, right? And that is how we have this Civil List. So this Civil List would then be this transparent document to show what is being paid to our royalty. right? And that is the genesis of it. And because sultans are also not a power unto themselves. I think that's what Kadir Yassin was also trying to say, right? We are all under the law, including the agong, including the sultans. And if people have to be paid according to the law, this have to be made known to the public. This is a matter of public interest.
Why was it needed to transition from an ordinance into the act in 1982?
I think to clear it up from a legal standpoint, because ordinances don't apply anymore. We have statutes and we call them acts. And I also think it was to make it easier to revise the pay. Because as I mentioned previously, you had to make an amendment to the enactment to increase the pay before. That means you would have to go through debates in parliament, right? And that would mean it would be slow. So I think what the Civil Law Act did was speed up that process and allow, quicker action to be taken where that is concerned.
Did the Act state a formula? You mentioned inflation, taking into account inflation and circumstances of the time. Mm. Is there a formula to take into account these changes in the Act?
There are no specific formulas in the Act. I think that's very much left to the government of the day to decide and consider.
In the past, when the previous cabinets made these decisions, was it ever made public? Was there any explanations or publicly available documents?
Okay, let me take the first question. No. These were not publicized as far as I know. Yeah. So there's been very little discussion on it. If you want to do a search also, you're going to find it difficult to find that information. Well, whether there is a document to that effect, yes, I believe so. Because whatever government does has to go through the Gazette. It is only once it passes through the Gazette, then it becomes official, right? So I imagine it's there. I was trying to try and look for it over the weekend, but I think there was just too much material to get through.
In the article all those years ago, were you responding to something?
One of my concerns, and I think that's quite clear in the latter part of the article, is my concern that these agong, sultans, royalties, they are already paid from the state. Or rather, they paid from taxes collected by either the federal government or the state government. Those taxes are obtained from a variety of ways, right? But the point is, they're all from the public. And I think it's known also that royalty, some sultans go into business as well. So I had a concern about that. If you're already in office and you're earning and you are receiving a remuneration from the state, I think then you should not be in business. Because one, I think that puts you in a position of conflict of interest, right? There's potential for undue influence simply because of just who you are, right? And I felt that, look, that is in a way also taking away opportunities from the rakyat, right? Because let's face it, you know, do you want to pair up with a sultan or do you want to pair up with Mr. Nobody, right? And it's pretty obvious which way a businessman would think, right? So I wanted to have at least a discussion about that, right? Unfortunately, when I wrote it 9 years ago, it just died there. But, you know, it got second wind on this round. So hopefully that happens.
Yeah. I remember a few years back when the Sultan of Johor, when there was a question surrounding his business interests and empire, the argument, or he responded by saying he can't rely on his allocation alone to survive. I think he cited 27,000 a month at the time.
Yes.
What would you say to that? That it's unfair to suppress their enterprising spirits?
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, I see it as if you're in a position and you want to take that position, then you have to take it with the limitations that come with that position, right? So I think we have to go back to understanding what exactly are the role of the royalty in this sense. Are they here to make money? What are they there for? I think their roles are pretty clear where the law is concerned, right? They have a constitutional role. They are part of the formal legal process. That is their job. That is what they're supposed to do, right? Now, how much money do you need for that, right? If you tell me $27,000 a month, that's a lot of money, right? But you can, I mean, $27,000 is a lot or a little depending on how much you spend, right? So it also raises the question of, is this how our sultans are supposed to be perceived as being incredibly rich, being able to do lots of businesses that they like? I don't know, but I think this is something that should be ventilated or discussed because it is a matter of public interest, and the public is also affected by these actions that they take. But if you read that article also, right, and I still remember the opening part of the article because it was a description of the way into the Johor Palace, right? And he passed by cages with panthers or some exotic animals. I don't know. The question is, does the Sultan need to have that?
I'm speaking today to lawyer Fahri Azad about what we pay our royalty. Up next, is it possible for the king to go bankrupt? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. With me in the studio today is Fahri Azad, a lawyer who wrote in 2009 an article titled What We Pay Our Royalty, discussing the Civil List Act 1982. In that article, you also mentioned that the allocations come from this fund called the Federal Consolidated Fund.
Yes.
What is this fund?
Okay. Both state and federal have a consolidated fund. The Federal Consolidated Fund basically is whatever the federal government gets by way of revenue, tax, fines, unclaimed monies, all kinds of things. It all goes in there. And that Federal Consolidated Fund is used to pay everything that you see, the services, right, the governments, the ministry, and it includes the Agong, because the Agong is under the federal. So the Sultan's pay would come under the State Consolidated Fund, i.e. the taxes, all the monies collected by the states themselves, right? So there are different funds. Each state would have its own fund.
And what is the finance minister's role in all of this?
Okay, the finance minister's role is under the Act is quite limited. He's basically there to make sure that, one, when the monies are paid. Okay, that's under Section 5 of the Act. And if, for example, there arises a situation where the allocated amount is not fully spent, the Prime Minister, under Section 6(2) of the Act, has the discretion to apply those unused monies to other expenses. But he has to first consult the Finance Minister. So that's his second role, I suppose, under the Act, to be consulted by the Prime Minister.
If there's any leftover, the Prime Minister decides where it goes to with the approval or
consultation
yeah. of the Finance Minister. Yes. And the Cabinet is the one that decides whether or not the quantum should be increased.
Yes. Yeah. Ultimately, that would be for the Cabinet to decide.
Right.
Yeah.
Is the King paid in a lump sum or is it an installment over the years?
Yeah. So that amount that you see stated in the Act is actually a yearly sum. And he is paid on the last day of every month under the Act. Yeah. So how he is paid is stated under Section 5 of the Act. Mm.
Mm. So just like getting a monthly pay?
Yeah, a monthly pay. Exactly.
Okay. And has the king ever faced a situation where he didn't have enough money to spend?
We are fortunate we don't have any precedent of our royalty going bankrupt.
Mm-hmm. Is that possible, though, for a royalty to go bankrupt?
Of course. It is quite possible for it to be bankrupt because these days they can be sued, right? They have limited immunity in that sense, but they now can be sued. Okay. For debts, they can be held accountable for criminal offences as well.
And has any member of the royal family been sued?
Yes, actually. There were two cases. The first was a case by this Singaporean lady called Farida Begum Abdullah. And in 1996, she tried to sue the Sultan of Pahang for defamation. Special court, the Attorney General gave consent for her to sue. She got into the court, but unfortunately, she got taken out on a preliminary objection where the special court decided that only a Malaysian could sue the Sultan. Singaporean couldn't. So her case was struck out. Right. The second case happened in 2009, and this is where Standard Chartered sued the Yang di Pertua Negeri Sembilan. Back then, it was Tuanku Jaafar in 2008, that's right, for a sum of 999,000 arising out of a letter of credit issued to him. Mm. And in that case, the court did enter judgment against him for that amount.
He owed 900,000, or the total borrowing was 900,000?
I think the value of the letter of credit was about 999,000 plus. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. And so what happened in the end?
Well, given that I didn't see any record of any bankruptcy proceedings, I imagine the amount was paid or settled.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we know whether when situations like this arise, or when the royal household does not have enough funds to pay for their expenditures, cabinet members, do we know whether they have increased the allocation in the past?
To account for stuff like this? I'm not sure. But I think that could be made under Schedule 4, right? So Schedule 4 is quite wide-ranging, really. So if they wanted to make such an allocation, they could be done under that.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't know whether it has been done for that.
You mentioned it's now possible to sue them. Previously, it was not.
Yes, that's right. Previously, they had absolute immunity from criminal and civil proceedings.
Right.
But that changed, I think maybe in the 90s, when the federal constitution was amended to have a provision for a special court. And that's under Article 182, I think.
Right.
Yeah. So now you can sue royalty, but first you have to get the personal written consent of the Attorney General, right? Once he says okay, then a special court will be constituted to hear that claim.
Why must it go through a special court as such?
I think it was a concession to the royalties so that to perhaps maybe create a distinction to say it won't be so easy, but now you still can, you know, sort of like a midway position.
Right.
Yeah.
But the composition of the judges on the special court, is it what makes it special besides the added hurdle to go through the AG?
One, only royalty can be sued in that court. Only the Agong and the Sultans, nobody else. Two, yes, you need AG's consent. And three, it is not a perpetual court, as I understand it. You know, it will be formed by the judges, and the judges can, at that point in time, decide how procedurally they're supposed to proceed.
Right.
Although I imagine they will simply adopt the procedures that is there already.
Right. So family members of the Sultan and Agong would not be subjected to this?
No, okay. No. I think they can be sued in the normal courts.
Yeah. Mm. What is the implication if a Sultan or an Agong goes bankrupt?
Well, aside from the humiliation of that, I think it would be a rather rare thing, very unlikely because, you know, I mean, Asians, we have all these things about face and all that. So I think even if they get into that position, I have a sense that the government may step in just to save their blushes, right? And maybe tell them, you know, maybe you want to tone down your spending, but behind closed doors.
Because it's now possible to sue a Sultan or the Agong, it's better for business, isn't it? Like in the past, if they had went into business,
yes, definitely,
absolutely no legal recourse.
Yeah, no legal recourse, right? And even if you want to have recourse, you know, it's so uncertain. You know, and business say they like stability, right? They like predictability. But if this is the AG who has to give his own personal consent, right, then it's very much up to his discretion. And, you know, so is your investment then.
Yeah. When the Agong is the Agong for 5 years during his tenure, would he also be getting the allocation from his home state?
Yeah.
So he's paid twice. from the federal government and then by the state government.
Yeah, right. Well, he's got two roles at that point in time.
Do their family members also receive an allocation or an allowance from the state government or the federal government?
Where the federal government is concerned, I don't see a provision for that, specifically for his family, right? The scheme of the act is quite clear. The Schedule 1 is just for the Agong. Schedule 2 is for his palace and the palace upkeep. Schedule 3 is for the Permaisuri. And 4 is the discretionary, right? So it may come under 4, but there is no specific provision for them where federal is concerned. Where the state is concerned, I have been trying to find the legislation related to that. I can't find it. But I do have, how should I say, family members who are in royalty. And they're quite distant. And even then, I hear and I understand that they do get an allowance. But it's a very small one. So I imagine it's a bit more extensive in the state as compared to federal.
And taxes, do they pay taxes, royalties?
I think the Sultan and the Agong, no, they don't pay taxes. They are exempt. And so it is only for the Agong Sultan and their official consort. That's right. So it provides that if they have more than one consort, it is the official one that only gets the tax exemption.
Right.
Yeah. The rest have to pay.
What about their businesses? Mm. If they're in business, they have to pay taxes for the income generated through their business?
That's very interesting because I was looking at the Income Tax Act, right? And what it seems to suggest is that if they did business through a particular person, then income tax would be counted on the business done through that person, right? Mm-hmm. But to me, it wasn't very clear from the legislation whether that would come under as well.
What do you think is the takeaway from this, from last week? How do we have a sober discussion about this without venturing into, I guess, seditious territories, so to speak?
Mm. Well, you know, I think sedition is, you know, you got to be malicious to do it, lah. Like, if, you know, if we're sitting here and discussing whether this is, you know, what they should be paid in relation to what they do, I think, you know, so long as we don't make any insulting or malicious kind of comments, I think we can have such a discussion. And I think it's healthy and important to have such a discussion because we have to understand that the Sultan and the Agongs also sit within the framework of the constitution, right? Which we are all subjected to, and nobody is above the law, right? And I think we are all entitled to talk about how that law is applied as well. In terms of discussion, we have to be mindful and not be emotive, lah. I would say, right? Let's stick to what the real issues are, stick to the facts, and keep our opinions close to the facts.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because as we see it, how events turn out, the circumstances of Dr. Kadir's position, I guess, also inhibited, or it's not good for perception.
Yes.
Because he's representing the Council of Eminent Person.
That's right.
And so he's also a Supreme Council member of Parti Bersatu.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So even though he says this is a personal opinion, but it shapes or colours the organisations that he represents. But it's also hard when you see someone comes out and say this is insulting. It puts a full stop to that discussion or debate, isn't it?
That's right.
Especially if that rebuff comes from a sultan himself.
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
What is the logical next step if you want to further this debate or further discussion? Because we don't want to wait another 10 years. You wrote this article 9 years ago.
Yes.
What we pay a royalty. And as you mentioned, not much traction, but it was because of what happened, what transpired last week, that it surfaced again on social media.
Yeah.
I saw it, and I thought it interesting enough to reach out to you to get your comments. How do we get beyond that or further discussion?
Okay. I think we're in a position to have these discussions given the environment that we're in, given the Attorney General who's just been appointed, right? I'm not second-guessing him, but I think he's a bit more, how should I say, open in terms of his thinking compared to the previous AGs, right? And, you know, he has been in that whole freedom of expression and speech fights before, right? So hopefully he can discern a malicious statement from how should I say, a bona fide one. I mean, let's put it this way, as you pointed out yourself, sedition is also a very, it's subjective, right? It's not objective. It's you know, whether you hurt this guy's feelings or not. I mean, really, you know? I would say, I think there is this want to talk about it. There's a need to talk about it because we have to look at what's going on also in the broader context of what has happened before. And I think it would be great if the royalty side also were, how should I say, considered lah, that perhaps maybe they could have conducted their palace or themselves better, right? For example, I mean, let's just take one very obvious thing that is apparent to all of us, the proliferations of datoships, right? It's all over the place. You see, you know, dodgy people having some of these titles, people like this being arrested for criminal offenses, you know, makes you wonder, how did they get it, right? I mean, it's an open secret around here as well, how they get it. You know, so it's against this backdrop, a certain frustration about some of these things that have gone on as well. I think that we have to really just say, look, these things happened right now. Now, I think all of us are prepared to say, OK, great. That was the past. And we're all looking to a better future. How can we all function better under the Constitution? Right. So in that sense, the point that I'm making is not very different from what Kadir Yassin was saying. Right. There's this wholesale look at what we did before and let's not make the same mistakes again. And that should go to every legal organization, every legal personality that falls under the federal constitution.
Public confidence is of utmost importance.
Of course. Public confidence, not only in the government, but in our royalty. You know, for a long time, we are proud of our royalty and a lot of us still are, right? And we want them to act in their best versions of themselves.
Fari, thank you very much.
Yep. Oh, my pleasure.
It's been enlightening. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.